A controversial Illinois policing bill, safety at the state capitol, a 2021 agenda, and an auction inside your own home. That and more right now on The Cities. The 2021 Illinois legislative session has already begun and is already, in some ways, on hiatus. A lame duck session ended in the early hours last week, followed by a quick session to open up the 2021 legislative year. That's followed by a recess until next month in the House. But it's already been a week marked by tensions, a bill that shakes up policing in Illinois, and the question of COVID hanging over the head of each and every lawmaker. We'll talk with Republican lawmaker Daniel Swanson of Woodhull in just a moment, but first, we start with Quad City Democrat Mike Halpin. What was it like so far as security around the Capitol in Springfield? I mean, are you worried about your safety?
So while we were down this past week in Springfield in session, I felt very secure, very safe. The Illinois State Police and Secretary of State Police did a fantastic job of doing what they could. We really didn't have any protests that I could see while we were down there, but it was nice to know that they were prepared for it.
But once again, I'm tired of this phrase, but is this now going to be the new normal? I mean, are you going to have to be even more secure in Springfield when you go to work?
I sure hope not. I think one thing that we saw with the D.C. Riot or break-in, whatever you want to call it, is that the people in D.C. are taking it seriously, the police are taking action, and demonstrating that it won't be tolerated. And I hope that message sinks in. These institutions are what we rely on to do the work of the people and to try to maintain that trust and respect that that democracy deserves.
But
and
we're
so
seeing,
I hope people get that message.
I'm sorry, but you're seeing in Springfield and in Des Moines a fencing going up and boarded up windows already in preparation for the coming week. These are sights that we never thought we'd see.
I agree, and it's incredibly saddening. These are our temples of democracy. These are what we rely on to do the people's work. And, I'm disappointed that we feel the need to take those steps, but I understand the abundance of caution that's being used by our state police and other folks.
Well, this past week, of course, the Senate was in the Capitol. The House was in the arena known as the Bank of Springfield Center in Springfield. So that's where you were. And there's another concern that you have is that somebody tested positive for COVID and members of the House now have to self-isolate.
Yes, and it was a known danger. It's one of the reasons why we didn't have the initial veto session in November. But given that we only had so much time left in this General Assembly, it was important that we went to Springfield to do the work. And so now we're in a position where we've got to isolate, make sure that we don't risk further spread of this virus before more people can be vaccinated, and do our part to try to protect our own communities.
You're talking about the important work that was done, and perhaps the most controversial would be the criminal justice reform bill. That law enforcement groups and several Republicans are angered because of two things. One is the way it was approved, seemingly rushed through overnight. Second off, tying the hands of law enforcement groups statewide. You were a supporter of it. There's calls for the governor to veto it. I'm assuming that's not what you want the governor to do.
No, I believe that the governor should sign the package, all four of the packages that were presented to him. And I want to start by saying that there's a lot of misinformation about this bill put out by opponents that are just ridiculous. I've been told by opponents that this makes murder or rape misdemeanors instead of felonies. It's simply not true. I've heard people say that this legalizes all drugs, which just isn't at all true. And I think these are the things that incite that anger against people trying to do good work in Springfield. And I think it needs to stop. If the opponents are willing to say these things, outright lies about the bill, what else are they exaggerating just to make people angry and just to make people oppose what I think are mostly common sense reforms in this bill?
Well, you would say that it makes police more accountable and also that you have more uniform standards statewide. police groups would argue that you're stringing their hands, you're holding them back from actually enforcing the laws day in and day out in small communities and in urban areas.
This package at the end of the day was about building trust between communities and the police. We've seen very specific instances with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, where police may not have acted in a way where they're being held accountable, and that trust breaks down. And so what this does, it has uniform, as you said, uniform standards that police across the state must comply with. And when they do, when they are in agreement, we follow these procedures, that's when that trust can build back up. The bill also provides for wellness training and mental health resources for officers, because this is a very difficult job. It's a dangerous job, and we need to support the officers in that. So this is it's a more balanced approach than what I think the opponents are making it out to be. And I think it is going to build trust in communities throughout the state, not just Chicago, but among folks right here in Rock Island County that believe they need to have better relationship with our local police.
Law enforcement also saying that in many ways they didn't have much input in this bill.
I would disagree with that as well. Over the fall, or actually late summer into the fall, we had many, many hearings, both on the Senate with House participation on a lot of the reforms that are included in this package. And the goal, I think, was originally to have something done in veto session in November. A lot of these reforms have been out there for a very long time, even before George Floyd last summer. I think it's a tactic from a group that I don't believe ever would have supported a final package. And I haven't seen any legislation introduced by these opponents that try to address these issues. From the very, very beginning, it's been a lot of no on this.
Chris Welch is now the Speaker of the House. Mike Madigan is gone after four decades of rule. How big of a difference will that make? Because the incoming speaker is also from metropolitan Chicago and is also, of course, a Democrat. Will things really change?
I think they will. I think every leader puts their own touch on an office. And I believe that Speaker Welch is not going to do things exactly the way that Speaker Madigan did. Obviously, he will try to reflect Democratic values, Democratic principles in the legislative process. But I believe he is going to have his own way of doing things, and it is going to be different. Now, how different, you know, remains to be seen. We want to see what his legislative priorities will be. But I do believe that he will be responsive to all the members. I know that he knows where the Quad City is. Quad Cities are, I should say, and I want to have him in as soon as possible to, when it's safe to do so, to have him visit the community and see what we have to offer here.
We're now heading into 2021. We still have the COVID pandemic, which is having real problems all throughout the state. The governor announcing that he's easing some of the restrictions right now. There's been a real debate about the fact that the legislature hasn't been that involved. Does that worry you as well? Because as you said, the sessions haven't been held lately out of an abundance of caution that the governor is pretty much dictating how the pandemic response is in the state.
I think that's correct, although we do have the ability to have that oversight. But in my conversations with other members, we believe that broadly the governor has been doing his very best in coming to a right and balanced approach. There were a couple of items that we passed both in the May session last year and just over the past week to help codify things that the governor couldn't do. We also passed a rental assistance and a mortgage assistance bill that goes above and beyond what the governor is able to do. So we've had our feedback. We obviously all have our disagreements with the governor, myself included. But overall, we've been taking the best approach we can to try to resolve these things.
Well, and coming this year, the big issue is going to be the budget, because revenue is not what it has been in the past, much because of COVID-19. The governor saying that you should expect some big cuts in the year ahead. Is that what we can expect in Illinois?
I believe that's the case. It's going to be a very, very challenging budget year. We are still optimistic that hopefully the federal government will go back and determine whether there's additional COVID relief for state and local governments. But we can't count on that. And it is going to unfortunately result in cuts that are going to affect people that need and deserve state services. I would hope that our colleagues across the aisle, however, make their input known as to what they want to cut. We've heard for years and years from their side that we need to make massive budget cuts, but we never see any proposals from them. So I hope they'll be a willing partner and not just say no to everything that we propose from our side of the aisle.
So what is your biggest priority in the session to come?
Unfortunately, as it has been for many years, it's got to be the budget. The budget is the base of everything, and frankly, since I've been elected, we haven't had an easy budget year. First with Governor Rauner and his budget impasse, and more recently, as we try to keep balancing the budget without doing so on the backs of working families. It's got to be our top priority. Given COVID, I'm not sure how often or how quote normal our session is going to be. So that really has to be a major focus. Of course, I will be trying to promote some of the local issues that we've been working on for many years. I filed a bill again just this week regarding an appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources to try to get the Lowhead dams either repaired or really just made less dangerous so we don't see any further loss of life along the Rock River. That's still going to be pending, but again, that's all tied into the budget too. So it's just going to be a very difficult year.
Illinois Democratic State Representative Mike Halpin. In a moment, Republican State Representative Daniel Swanson. And later, bidding on great prizes from the comfort of your home. You're watching The Cities on WQPT.
The Quad Cities is all in this together. We take care of one another because that's who we are. So mask up, wash your hands, stay informed, and continue to support our QC businesses. We rally together while staying apart so that in time we can get back to the very best version of the Quad Cities.
Republicans in the Illinois House and Senate say they're frustrated and angry as major legislation was rushed through both chambers in the last hours of a lame duck session of the state legislature. At the heart of it all is sweeping changes to make uniform rules for policing across the state. We talked with Republican Daniel Swanson from his home in Woodhull. Let's start with the criminal justice reform bill that you're heavily critical of. What is it in particular about this bill that makes you angry enough that you want the governor to veto it?
Well, the process it went through, we saw HB 163, which was the original bill, and we've got that in a matter of 2 or 3 days of even having a chance to read 611 pages of that legislation.
Sure. So the process is a bad thing. I perfectly understand that because it was done actually overnight in the lame duck session. But you've had a chance to look at it now. Is there anything in particular about it that you don't like?
Well, the no cash bail is troubling. Some of the protections for our officers that were removed from it in reporting procedures of what they can and can't do. It's a split second decision anyway for our officers. And then to put more pressure on them that should I chase this person involved in a illegal act or should I let him go and then maybe catch him at some other time and place? And has that person injured anyone? Should I chase after that person now because they've injured someone and may injure someone else, or should I let them go and possibly injure more people? So there's a lot of things that trying to help the officers make their decisions in those split seconds is important. And then there's the other pieces for our even the certification, decertification. I mean, that was all put into one bill at the last minute. And the decertification process, there's so much. When these two bills were put together, a lot of the policy language and legalese part of it conflicts with itself. And I know Representative Mazzocchi tried to bring that to their attention and pretty much fell on deaf ears. So that's some of the troubling spots, that they contradict themselves and don't provide enough policy and guidance throughout this legislation, even though it's over 700 and some pages.
Well, and as you know, I mean, there has been calls for police reform or some uniformity of police action statewide. Is that something that you do support?
Well, it's something I do support. I think every officer on the street or in the car or wherever they're serving at the state capitol, they'll agree that good cops don't want to serve with bad cops. And what this legislation really doesn't do, it doesn't help sort them out in any way, shape, or form. You know, good cops are just as someone can report a good cop with a statement and not be held accountable for their statement because they are held. They don't have to be. The officers don't have to be provided the name of who possibly filed a complaint against them.
Let's talk about security, especially at the state capitol. I mean, there's extra security being put in ahead of the inauguration. But once the inauguration is over and you guys get back to legislating in February, are you worried about your safety at the state capitol? I mean, when you talk about some of the unpopular decisions that you've had to make or that your colleagues have had to make, it puts you in a tough position. Is it now a position that you're worried about your safety?
No, I'm not concerned at all. I have faith in the officers out there. You know, they got kicked in the teeth, but they're going to continue to do their job. They're going to continue to do their job under the stress that they're going to be put under. You know, we talk about the state capitol. Just this today, I've had shared some emails with the Illinois Army National Guard, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of soldiers deployed over the next couple of days. About, close to 1,000 soldiers are going to be either in Springfield or out in Washington, D.C., supporting and having the backs of our police officers and our Capitol Police. So I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned.
Well, the other danger, of course, that you're facing is COVID. House members now have to self-isolate after a case of COVID was found, I'm assuming, at the Bank of Springfield Arena where you guys were holding session. That's kind of the world we live in as well, especially for you in the legislature.
Right. I'm coming to you from my home. I'm not in my office. I did go out to the farm to do chores, but kept myself separate from everyone else. I'm going to give myself some time to see if I start developing any symptoms or what might take place. So, you know, family and friends and everyone that I have to be concerned about. So, right now, I'm broadcasting from home.
Well, and you've also pointed out, and your colleagues on the Republican Party, of the governor's overreach, that he has really been steering the pandemic response single-handedly without the use of the legislature being involved. I'm assuming that's still a concern of yours, but I guess right now, how would you do things differently?
Well, I'd use more people. I'd take more advice. I'd listen to mayors. I'd listen to the legislators. I'd listen to my health departments out in the country. I'd listen to the representation I have out in my counties. And I don't believe that's being done. I believe, as you said, the governor is taking this all on himself. And continually that goal line continues to move. I don't recall seeing in the first initial phases of the operation where we had tiers interlaced within there. And all of a sudden here, what, a month or so ago, we started to look at tier 1, 2, and 3. So it just seems to be that goal line keeps getting moved. And fortunately today, it sounds like we are going to be moving region 2 here in the next couple days into new phases. But you know, we've got to get things so our small businesses, small businesses know how to protect us. And there's been enough research now, I think, that they can handle this problem. We just need to let them go forward and do what they need to do to get back in business.
What do you think is going to happen as far as the budget is concerned? The governor has been warning us that you can expect big cuts because of revenues not coming in because of the pandemic. It's going to be, in some people's minds, a bleak year, 2021.
Oh, absolutely. And the governor took this on himself. You know, we didn't put any votes on his budget because we knew it was too far relying on borrowing money, and a budget doesn't include borrowed money. We see now where he's trying to decouple us from the federal statutes on how our small businesses are to report losses and earnings, and it could be a $500 million to $1 billion hit to our small businesses. And fortunately, when we were in Springfield this past week, we were able to stop that legislation, but it's going to be called up again here, I think, sooner rather than later. So it's going to put our small businesses in a world of hurt, having to come up with $500 million to $1 billion more in tax revenue.
Illinois Republican State Representative Daniel Swanson from Woodhull. in a moment, spending your money very wisely without leaving your home. But first, here's Laura Adams with some ideas to put on your agenda if you're going out and about.
This is Out and About for January 18th through February 2nd. Join WQPT's The Auctions at Your House. Check out all of the items up for auction by going to WQPT.org/auction and sign up to bid by phone while watching on January 28th and 29th from 8 to 10. Join the 38th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Service and Awards online. The event will be live streamed on YouTube. It features keynote speaker Reverend Julian from Living Water Christian Center in Moline. It's January 18th, beginning at 10:30 a.m. Give the gift of original poetry while supporting local writers through the Midwest Writers Center Poetry on Demand program. It runs through February 28th. Or check out Brad Bisbee's art at the Smith Studio and Gallery in downtown Geneseo through the 30th. Davenport Public Library presents a virtual program titled Davenport's Bucktown in 1903, The Worst Town in America, with author Jonathan Turner, the 25th at 6, registration required. Register for Trivia Putt-Putt. Because of COVID, this event replaces the 16th annual Putt-Around, benefiting Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Play from anywhere. Costs $30 a person to play. January 27th from 3:30 to 5. This year's Hand-in-Hand Chili Cook-Off will be different. Drive up to the Fair Center at Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds on January 30th from 1 to 5 and pick up your chili samples and then hop online to vote. For more information, visit WQPT.org. WQPT is turning back the clock 37 years to present our original fundraising celebration, The Auctions at Your House, with two nights of suspense-filled, exciting television. Instead of phoning in your bid for fabulous trips and experiences, you'll sign up using your phone. So check out the items available to bid on and sign up at WQPT.org/auction. And we'll see you January 28th and 29th for The Auctions at Your House, each night at 8.
Day in and day out, we're thankful for your support of the work we do at WQPT. Not only work that you see on the air day in and day out, but the outreach that WQPT offers families, children, schools, and the entire community. And this year, instead of one of our biggest fundraisers, we're holding an auction in your own house. We talked with WQPT's Dawn Schmidt about what you can expect. Well, Dawn, auction is at your house is kind of a neat idea. It's not a new idea for QPT, but tell us what it's supposed to all be about.
Yes, the auction is at your house is a remake of a live auction that WQPT did in the mid to late, or started doing in the mid to late 80s. It's back then, the items would be shown on air and then everyone would call in and make their bid for the auction items. But this year, how we're remaking it and modernizing it is the auction will open up on the 19th, so it's already open. So people can go on, they can review the items. Number one, you have to sign up to be part of the auction, but you can view the auction, view the items, and then you're able to bid on your cell phone.
Well, that is so easy, isn't it?
Excuse me?
That is so easy, isn't it?
It is very easy.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some great items out there, too, are there not?
There are. We have lots of hotel stays. You can also get half a hog. There's a stay at a local Airbnb. And WQPT had an art show that began in December. All of the pieces of art that were part of this show will be for sale on the auction.
Oh, that's fantastic.
As well as a couple pieces that were donated by Spike Waddell.
Oh, that is excellent. That is excellent. And as you said, it's on your phone. It's on your computer. You can see what's going on. But is it just as easy to bid?
Oh, my gosh. It's super easy. And once you start bidding, you can even get notices if someone outbids you. So you can always make sure that you're top of the line when it comes to getting your items.
Well, because you used to, I mean, on so many of these auctions, you're kind of hovering over your item and elbowing people out of the way, not so much this time. And it's going to a good cause. I mean, tell me, when people are bidding on these items, what is the money used for?
All of the proceeds from the auction go right back into WQPT. It helps support our programming. We have number one trusted brand for kids programming. We also, all of the money goes back into our outreach that we do. So we give away over 7,000 books in our first book program. So all of the money goes right back into the community.
Yeah, and COVID has really made people hunker down in their house. And some people, especially parents with young children, I mean, public television has really helped in the learning experience for so many kids.
Absolutely. We have the number one children's programming, and all of our children's programming is focused around what the kids are learning in school and promoting learning.
And it's called Auction Is At Your House. It couldn't be easier, could it?
Could not be easier.
WQPT Interim General Manager Dawn Schmidt. Once again, the big auction is going on right now. Take a look at the WQPT website as we bring the auction to your house. From now until January 29th, you can check out some great items, many you could bid on now. Big items also available later on this month. A great way to support PBS in the Quad Cities while staying in the comfort of your home. So check out the details right now at WQPT.org. This year, the auction is at your house, so join us and have some fun. And as always, on the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, plus streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to talk to us as we talk about the issues on the cities.